Hello, welcome to ASP.NET Authentication with Identity Jumpstart. I am Adam Tulliper, here.
Code Foster,
I love it.
I'll go by Jeremy Foster today, though.
This is our identity. We couldn't get the mustaches and the hats, so this is what we're going to kind of do here.
Adam and I have an identity problem.
We have an identity problem.
But we're going to solve it today.
We're going to solve it today, and we can show you how to solve your identity problem as well. I might even call it a crisis.
Identity crisis.
So shall we get rolling?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. A little bit about Smwa. I'm Adam Tulliper. You can find me on Twitter, Adam Tulliper, at Adam Tulliper. I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft. I love pretty much all things technology. My wife calls me a geek, so I guess I have to accept that term. Been a software architect for many years and try to help other folks implement their great solutions using a Microsoft technology stack.
Cool. And I'm Jeremy Foster. You can find me online at codefoster.com. Also, follow me on Twitter at Code Foster. I use Twitter quite a bit, and I think that the things that I tweet about are valuable, but I don't know. That's just me.
I think they are.
Anyway, so you can find my blog at codefoster.com. I'm an author, presenter, coder, also a developer evangelist here at Microsoft, a direct compadre with Adam here, my good friend Adam. And I also do a podcast called Code Chat. You can sign into Code Chat and subscribe. That's kind of fun. And Code Show is a project that I and some other contributors work on. So yeah, that's me.
Very cool. We've got lots of great topics today. Six to be exact, with many, many subtopics inside of them. We're gonna give you guys a great overview of identity to get you a base understanding of what it is. Talk about local authentication using database users, external login providers, two-factor authentication. That's a huge thing nowadays. In fact, what is two-factor? We're gonna get to all that and show you how to use it in your applications. And I've got a lot of old web applications. I want to know how to migrate them over from a membership to identity. So we're going to do that. And then finally, we're going to close up with some identity tips and recommendations at the end of the day.
Now, Adam, tell me this. How much experience do you suppose a person coming into this course should have?
I'm somewhat familiar with identity.
Okay.
If you are an absolute expert in identity, I'm hoping that you're here
to help
as well.
In the chat room.
Yes. So everybody is welcome. We're happy to have you. So everybody out there, we want you to join the MVA community. Tell all your family and friends about it as well. Microsoft Virtual Academy now has over 2.5 million registered users. That's huge.
Million.
Not 100, not 1,000. Million. You can't see my little pinky up here. Million. So get 50 MVA points for this event. Use aka.msmva-voucher. And there's a code that's on the slide deck there that you can use as well that expires 12/22. So again, thanks for joining. And shall we get rolling on an overview of identity?
Oh, we shall.
So we're going to talk about what is identity. A history lesson for everybody. I like history in high school and college. So we'll give you guys a little history lesson today. Architecture of ASP.NET Identity, and we'll walk through a template for web forms and MVC, which might leave folks wondering, are we gonna be covering web forms? Are we gonna be covering web MVC today? Primarily MVC, however, we are gonna throw some web forms in there as well. The good news is the code is very, very similar between both of them. So once you understand the basic concepts, they will map over to either one pretty much all the same. Jeremy. What is identity?
Do you want my opinion?
Tell me your opinion before I even show the first bullet point on the slide.
My opinion is getting the person right. Who is it? I don't know. Making sure.
Could it be all about the user? What about if they want to access something? What if they want to... Can I look at all of your Facebook photos? Can I look at your user accounts? Can I do this, right? So we want to know, we want to be able to authenticate and authorize users. So everybody's got a different definition. When you go on the net and look up identity, you're gonna see some folks refer to it as this, maybe just managing a user. Some say using authorization and authentication as well. So to me, it kind of all rolls up into one, and we're gonna talk about how we actually do all of those today, managing your users, how we're gonna authenticate, and how we're gonna authorize users. Now, there's been some big, big changes, and we'll look at that when we look at the history slide, but identity works with OWN middleware, which you're probably gonna say, well, what is OWN middleware? Something fairly new to ASP.NET, and so we'll talk about that in a little bit. And it is a claims-based system. A claims-based system, we're gonna talk about what claims are as well, but basically, your claim stores The system itself stores logins, stores claims, and stores roles. And we'll look at actually what all those are as well. Now, ASP.NET Identity, as of V1, they were added as NuGet packages. So you can install them literally into any project that runs on ASP.NET 4.5. What does ASP.NET Identity support? This is a cool slide because this shows really that you can integrate with almost anything that you need to for your application. If you want to integrate with OAuth or OpenID, or you're going to use like Azure Active Directory, which we actually have a demo of later on. If you want just your own SQL database, an individual database backend, or maybe you want a RavenDB or MySQL backend, no problem. And again, supports roles, supports claims. Now, you'll notice as we're going through the decks today that Windows authentication isn't really covered, because that doesn't really fit into the identity system, because that's really having your more for intranet applications. And the way that those handles tokens, everything and all that, doesn't hit the database that would be used for identity. So that information is stored separately. So it doesn't quite fit into what we're going to cover today. But we are going to look at virtually everything else.
So we're talking about knowing who users on the internet are. Users in the world finding out who they are. Not necessarily users in my corporation,
it
perhaps.
It could be users in the corporations. I mean, I've been in a lot of environments where we created web applications internally, but we chose not to use Windows authentication for whatever the business reason was at the time, or technical reason was at the time, where we had local databases authenticating users, or we had a single sign-on solution, so we didn't go to something else. So it could be intranet, or it could be internet. Identity will cover either. It's just Windows authentication. It's pretty much just used for an intranet type scenario. What is single sign-on? Single sign-on allows a user to provide, and again, this is something that you'll see different definitions of depending where you look it up, but a good summary of that, the user provides either the same credentials to access multiple services, or the user provides credentials once. That allows them to access multiple services. The idea is you want to make it easier for the user to not have to remember, oh, I've got this password here, this password there, this password there. Now, this isn't the same as kind of sharing that one password amongst every single site. The single sign-on experience is ideally supposed to make it a little bit easier for the user and make it easier to manage user accounts as well. So I mentioned that identity is a claims-based system. What the heck are claims? I'm going to take these glasses off now because I think you know my identity. I know your identity. Set these good. So claims. A claims-based system, it's a little bit odd to get your head around. If you've been doing anything with membership or anything with authentication, authorization with ASP.NET in the past using what was built in, unless you were using Windows Identity Foundation, you typically were using a role-based system where you basically said, is this person an administrator? Is this person a user? Are they an accounting user? So claims allows us to have a lot more power on top of that. That allows us to assign many different attributes to a user. We could have an email address. Now, granted, it could also be profile information, but we could have email address. We could have other private information that we don't want anybody seeing, but that we're using to make a decision about that user. It's not just, are they, do they happen to be an accountant? We could assign all sorts of attributes there. Do they belong to, you know, we're at Microsoft? Do they belong to this building? Can you think of any other things that we might use claims for?
Oh man, there's a million. I was just going to say that I think that claims are kind of a superset of roles. Roles are kind of categories of people, you know,
exactly,
people in
yes.
this department or people that are this type or whatever. And claims are kind of a superset. And I like to think of them as they're a little difficult to wrap your head around because they are more abstract. But I like to think of them as more atomic. I can actually define what it is that I want to do more atomically when I'm using claims-based
Absolutely.
Than when I'm using role-based.
Absolutely. And if we can see the class here on the right-hand side for claims, they've got a bunch of properties on there, but mainly it's a key value system. So the user delivers claims on over to your application. They come from all sorts of different, you can have them stored in a database, you can assign them at runtime. Your code can assign them maybe as on a per request basis, or you can actually store them in the database and the identity system will pull them out there and add them to your token. And claims can really anything you want to contain as information for a user. Now you have to be careful here because claims can get stored with that user's token that follows them around in their browser. So I wouldn't probably go and store 1,000 pieces of information in there. Not to be confused with storing information about a user's profile, which I just want to keep in a table and pull out as I needed. Claims is something that you want to use for either an authentication or an authorization type basis, not just like, hey, what's your favorite color? If I want to store that profile information about a user, I'll keep that in a separate table, and we'll talk about how to add those types of fields onto a user account as well.
Yeah.
And roles are typically single value, like I mentioned, administrator, accounting. Claims, key value. So you can say, we're actually going to look at a demo here, Facebook access token. We can store all sorts of custom information on there. So claims are really cool, and that's what the whole identity system is based around. Even if we're using roles, everything on the back end is still, it's a claim-based system.
So are you saying I can define whatever key I want?
You can, absolutely. And there are some built-in ones. There's some enumerations in there for name and ones that have been defined in the public community.
Yeah.
And then there's other ones you can store whatever
like
you
want. Like some standards that we agree on.
Yep.
Great.
Let's talk about history. I like history. Do you like history, Jeremy?
Sure, especially when it's technical.
Technical history, that is interesting. We've got the over to headquarters building. My building knowledge here is pretty bad.
92?
Maybe. The museum where you can walk through and see all 92. The stuff in there. Yep. And the library's got some really cool stuff in. If you ever get a chance, stop by the campus and tour it out there. So, history of ASP.NET account services. I don't want to say identity because I consider identity something that's pretty recent. Let's go way, way, way back in time. 2005, November.
I can hardly remember.
I was living in Pennsylvania. It was a rainy month. The weather on that day. It was
rainy here.
It was rainy here. I got off the plane last night, and sure enough, what did I hit? Rain. I live in Southern California, so it's sunny. I'm not used to this rain. So 2005, ASP.NET 2.0 came out, and that brought membership. That was an exciting time because now we had something that everybody was home rolling. Everybody was creating their own tables with like a login, and a lot of folks were just storing a plain text password. Some were hashing it, some were encrypting it. So this brand new system came out. It supported SQL Server and SQL Express. Then, in May of 2012, Microsoft released the Universal Providers, and that was first released through as a NuGet package, and that supported finally all of our databases. Previously, you couldn't use something like SQL CE. Now you could use the Universal Providers to access basically all of our databases. SQL CE, Azure, SQL Express like it could before, full SQL Server. So it allowed you to access everything. And then in 2012, we came out with Simple Membership. And that was something that actually came, it seemed like it was new because it came out in MVC, but that was actually sourced on our web pages technology. And you could also install in the web forms too. There were some blog posts on that, but it didn't come out of the box that way. In October of 2013, finally, brand new identity system, completely different than anything that we ever had before. And then really not that much longer later, about 5 months after that, ASP.NET Identity V2. So lots of innovation in the space here into our identity system, brought two-factor authentication, account lockout, account confirmation, password, and account reset. So some really neat features that just came out just a few months ago in there. And now, finally, looking forward, we have the preview bits that have come out for ASP.NET vNext, ASP.NET 5. So we're not going to cover that too much right now today because that is a future technology and things can always change. So, but we will touch upon just a couple of minor points with that as well. All right, Jeremy, let's talk about the architecture of ASP.NET Identity. So first, I do want to mention, because this helped me a lot in learning the identity system, the source code to V3. Now, most of what we're going to cover today is V2, but the source code to V3 is available on GitHub. V2 is not currently available source code, but V3, there are many, many things that are the same, and that's a great place to open it up and kind of learn about how everything's structured in there. Contribute. It's an open source project. We definitely want your ideas. If you have something that you think would make the identity system more awesomer, then by all means, go ahead, go on to GitHub and make some changes and recommend them to us. Next, Katana. Whoosh.
Katana.
Katana and Owen. So I told
not to
you,
be confused with Cortana.
Not this to be confused.
This is a different Katana.
Totally different. Nope, not even. Actually, you could say Cortana, show me a Katana. Oh, yes. That would probably work well. So what is Katana and what is Owen? So let's understand a little bit of a separation here. Identity, to be able to fully use identity, there's a security middleware. So there's a lot of things that you don't want to have to manage. And there's two systems here. We've got a security system and an identity system. And they kind of work hand in hand. Microsoft there's a standard OWIN. And we decided to say, let's go ahead and abstract out something that you can code against and not have to tie things to maybe directed at IIS. Maybe you have scenarios where you want to self-host your application. You may or may not be running in an IIS environment. Well, then you have to have code that detects that and maybe uses IIS-specific features or doesn't use those features. So as you start looking at the back end of ASP.NET, you realize there's a lot of kind of hard dependencies on things, and this kind of helps free that up. You can code to what OWIN supports, and it just works. You don't have to worry about kind of what's plugged in on the back end there.
And besides just the adaptability, you also have the ability to interchange these OWIN modules and only take exactly what you need and no more. So you're not taking a larger dependency, you're taking whatever smaller dependencies you happen to need in your application.
Absolutely. Katana, if you're searching on the net and you start doing a little bit of research on Katana and OWIN, going forward, the name Katana, everything there has been fully integrated into ASP.NET V5. So it's no longer going to be called Katana. So if you're going to go out and do a little research going forward, you're watching this module down the road, just take note of that.
So the thing to look for now is ASP.NET identity, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
You can also look in OWIN, so you can still code against that definition. So I would actually say research OWIN, and I do have a link at the end of this deck where you can go in and learn a little bit more about that. But just basically, if you have an OWIN module, it really defines something easy that allows a pipeline to communicate across. Your OWIN module essentially just gets a dictionary that's keyed by a string and stores an object in there. So you could look at your request headers in there. You could look for any sort of custom data. Let's say you are integrating with Facebook authentication. You can look for specific tokens coming back. You don't have to do all this kind of coding against specific things. You get this simple collection, this dictionary object. You look in there for the information you need. You add whatever you need to it. And then the next module processes. It's a really, really simple interface that allows you to develop these modules or use whatever Microsoft has developed for their modules as well. Now, the ASP.NET security middleware can be used in any OWIN-based application. Now, again, we have two systems. We have security and we have identity.
Now, would you say that security is roughly analogous to authorization, whereas identity is roughly analogous to authentication?
I would in some cases. When we get to the external login providers, you could authenticate with the external providers. So there's sometimes you're going to authenticate locally, sometimes you're going to authenticate remotely as well.
Okay.
The security components, though, take away, they abstract that out for you. So identity, think of as typically keeping track of your user account, who you are, what your roles are, what your claims are, and we'll look at the schema very shortly when we open up a demo and kind of walk through that. So it just kind of helps you keep track of your user account and the attributes surrounding that user account. The security modules on there help integrate with Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft authentication. They do kind of that heavy lifting as opposed to just kind of maybe storing a token and storing your user account details. So they do a lot more of that heavy lifting for you. All right. Now, in understanding what we're going to look at when we walk through a template walkthrough here, with identity, one of the important things that we want to look at is using managers and stores. So there's a user manager and a role manager. If you want to go ahead and manually query a user, you would use the user manager. And on the right-hand side of this slide here, we check out, there we go, this mouse. Our applications talk to a manager. That's the API that you are typically going to use. If you want to store a role in the database, you would use a role manager. If you want to store a user, you would use a user manager. If you want to query the claims for a user, you would use a user manager. If you want to query the roles for a user, you would use a user manager. If you want to create, delete, everything around the user, which one would you guess it's using?
I'm guessing you're
the user manager. The user manager, or all of the managers then talk to a store via an interface. So meaning that you can kind of, because you're coding against an interface, an abstraction there, you can plug things in and out. So you might change your underlying store and never ever have to change your user manager. It might just work with it. Now, my little icon's down there, lower right-hand corner. Since we're talking about managers and stores, that actually is a manager. It looks kind of like Superman. But if you notice, it's probably hard to see. He's got IT. I figured that guy was an IT manager. So that's where the manager comes from, and the store, of course, on the right-hand side.
It's too bad you have to explain your slide.
You know, I just I don't want it to be mistaken there. Superman, this is definitely an IT manager who
IT,
could be
obviously.
Synonymous with
sure.
with Superman.
Sure, we, a lot of respect there.
A lot of respect there. All right, so you are typically going to work with a user manager, and it's going to talk to everything else down the line. It will talk to the store, which in turn talks to your data access layer, which in turn talks to the actual data source database itself. So it's pretty easy for you to use, and that template code does a lot of that footwear, which we'll look at as well. So again, if you wanted to store a role, would you be using a user manager? You would use a role manager. If you wanted to store a role for a user, then you would be using a user manager. All right, key components here. The identity side, you notice the components are pretty simple there. Because remember, identity is storing information about you. So there's identity, which contains all the base interfaces, iUser, all of the interfaces for storing a phone number, for all of your stores, everything behind the scenes. The majority of that work is stored in microsoft.asp.net.identity. The identity framework is a specific implementation of that that gives you something out of the box that works with our databases. And that's why we use identity framework, because identity framework works across our databases. On the security side, this kind of gives you a little bit of a differentiation where you get to see what the middleware does for you. So on the right-hand side, Entity Framework, that stores stuff out to a SQL database. On the left-hand side, our security middleware, that what does all the heavy lifting. So if you want to communicate with Facebook, Google, Microsoft account, you want to do OAuth, Twitter, that's all over there. For the most part, you don't talk to that. You let that all kind of handle that plugs into your system, looks for the information that it needs, and processes it. So most of what we're going to be looking at today is all on the identity side. Although we're going to look at how the security side integrates with that. Now, I caution, don't stare too long at this slide. I wanted to put a lot of information on here as kind of a reference slide, and you can see, for those that really like it, go back and look at this slide. But if you understand everything on the slide, you really understand most of what you would need to do, 99.9% of what you need in identity. So let's talk about some of these classes in here. I talked about you have a user manager, you have a role manager. There's an identity user. And that's you. That's an iUser interface. Identity user happens to be, as it stands now, it's an Entity Framework implementation of a iUser interface. So you, out of the box, you can store things to.
So I'll find identity user in the EF namespaces?
You will now. That's, again, I don't want to talk about VNext too much. That's one minor thing that's changing VNext. Some of the namespaces are changing. But identity user right now is in the Entity Framework namespace, yes.
Okay.
Email service, SMS service, as you might understand, you can tell by the name that this probably doesn't get you food, probably doesn't do laundry. This deals with emails and text messages. So this is notified during two-factor authentication, which we're going to look at in a separate module, and also when you want to do like account confirmation. So email service, SMS service, that's what gets called when you do two-factor authentication.
Is there a food service provider built into the
framework? You can make one. Oh. So this is all extensible, right? You can do I food service provider. I'm going to look on GitHub, see if you come out with that soon.
Yeah, that's going to be popping up.
User manager. Those are the APIs that, as I mentioned, probably ad nauseum so far, that is what you're going to store and access everything about the user with. User claim and authentication info. That all talks to the user store, so that abstracts it away from you. If you want, you could talk to the user store, but the user manager essentially does everything that you need for you. Next, role manager. Talked about that too. That is what talks to the role store. If you want to store a role name called administrator, if you want to store a role name called accounting, you would use a role manager. If you want to find the roles for that user, you would use user manager, because now you're talking about a specific user.
So the claims and the roles really work in parallel, and we still have the concept of a role even in a claims-based system?
Yeah, behind the scenes, that all gets read out and gets packaged into all of your claims, which gets written out to a cookie. So even though the roles still work, it's still behind the scenes a claims-based system.
Oh, I see.
Now, the user store, that is what talks to the data store. In the case of what we're going to look at, that's what talks to Entity Framework. We have another demo where we're going to talk to RavenDB as well. So if you want to do any of your own custom implementation, then you write your own user store. But there's one out of the box for you that works. And then we have a role store, which same thing as a user store. That's what actually talks to your data provider to in turn talk to your data store. Sign-in Manager. This one is a cool class, and that's just a high-level API to sign a user in. So I talked about getting user info, storing user info, storing roles. Well, what if you just want to sign in a user? And that's when you talk to this high-level Sign-in Manager. Now, again, don't stare at this too long because we're going to simplify this. Ready?
Let's go.
Let's simplify. Again, identity user. That's you with your properties. Username, email, email verified, all the custom information, and we're going to look at how you can customize that class a little bit more.
Now, in normal practice, is the identity user something that I inherit, override, and create my own identity user that's derived from this one, or do I tend to use the identity user itself?
So in the basic template as it stands, they have an application user that inherits from identity user.
And that's a specific one for that application.
Yep, and that you can add all of your own custom stuff to that. They just give you something out of the box. It's pretty empty with properties. It gets whatever identity user has on it. So identity user has a bunch of those built-in properties. And then they give you, since that's stored in a separate namespace in a pre-compiled assembly, out of the box, they give you an application user. So you have something you can look at and just go in and modify, and we'll look at how we do that too. Next. Email service, SMS service, as I mentioned, that is not an iFood service provider. that's what's going to be notified. Application user manager, that's what you call to manage your users. So a user manager, as I've talked about 100 times so far, that's what's going to deal with everything with your users storing it. The application user manager is kind of like your application user. It just gives you code in your application. So when we open up this demo project, we're going to see there's an application user manager class in there. It gives us something that we can customize a little bit easier. Sign-in manager. That's it. So this is a simplified version of that. If you understand this today as we leave here, I will be a very, very happy man.
Can you explain one more time what a user store is?
User store implements iFood service provider.
No. I know that's not right.
So a user store stores information about the user. If you want to create a user account, if you want to store a phone number on that user. If you want to say Jeremy Foster has the role accounting, then I talk to the user manager to talk to the user store to save that out.
Now, like an identity user, is a user store, at least at this point, an entity framework concept?
iUserStore is a generic concept.
Okay.
A user store is a specific implementation that talks to Entity Framework.
Okay.
So if you want to create your own custom implementation, then you would create your own.
So if I want to store my users in XML files, or if I want to store them in RavenDB, or if I want to store them in...
You create your own custom user store then that uses the appropriate interface so everything can talk to it, and then it just talks to, you know, either can read write XML file or talk to RavenDB's API or talk to Entity Framework. But that user store, so you see how everything's kind of abstracted away here. You write it out to the user store, you talk to the user store, and it takes care of all the rest for you.
Now, will this, in response to an answer in the chat room, will a system like this, obviously it'll handle an application and all of the users that apply to that application, will this, out of the box or with, you know, some customizations, handle a multi-tenant environment or have a framework that handles multiple applications?
This does not. I'm trying to recall if I have a slide in our many modules today on that. It does not out of the box.
Okay. So
in a case like that, you would either have to add your own custom. I think I actually do mention this because I think I have a URL to somebody who has a project on GitHub for that.
Okay.
It's not out of the box, but somebody has already code for it out there on GitHub to be able to do
it. And that kind of feels right. It doesn't feel like it should belong in the core.
Yep. Okay. Pretty easy so far, right? This makes it a little bit easier. Identity user, email service, user manager, sign-in manager.
Clear as mud.
All right, so let's go ahead and look at a template. I think I will use, I'm going to use Visual Studio 2015 for this one.
All right,
it's a preview right now.
That's what I call a code cowboy.
A code cowboy, yeehaw. So the point I want to drive home with this, if you are at home and you're using Visual Studio 2013, let's say, no problem. I just want to show you can do the exact same thing in either system here. I'm going to create a new project, and ASP.NET web application, this is essentially the same thing that you're going to get in Visual Studio 2013, even though I'm in 2015.
Now, wait a minute.
Let me take one step back here. This is almost the same. There's one more step I need to go through here. So we'll call this basic template. Oops, look at those. Always messes you up a little bit when you get on a keyboard that you're not quite used to. A little bit different than the one you use at home. All right, now we're gonna talk about a couple differences here. This is where, this guy right here, this is the same thing that you're gonna get in Visual Studio 2013. And again, I'm in 2015 right now.
Okay.
But notice they differentiate here. ASP.NET 5 empty, ASP.NET 5 start a website. This here is the same thing that you're gonna get in 2013 right now. So it's kind of cool that it supports one or the other.
Okay.
So we're gonna stick with the 2013 one, essentially. And I don't know if you saw that, so I'm gonna, while that's loading, I'm gonna create another one here just to show you this guy right here, since this deals with authentication. Notice on the new project dialog here, change authentication. The default here was individual user account. No authentication, well, that kind of makes sense. Individual user accounts for applications that store user profiles in a SQL Server database, or you can use things like Facebook, Twitter, Google, Microsoft, and we're gonna talk about all that today. Organizational accounts, we're actually gonna talk about this as well. And then I covered Windows authentication for internet applications. Doesn't quite fit in the identity system here. So we're gonna stick to these two guys today. Individual user accounts for the most part, and we're gonna touch upon organizational accounts. So going back to the template that I just created here. So we'll do this for MVC, and then we'll go through and I'll show you the differences in web forms as well here. Let's run this. And this gives you a nice looking basic template here that gives you the ability to, I'll wait till this comes up, register for an account or log in. Now clearly we don't have any logins yet. If I go ahead and register, we'll use this guy, adamtuliperlive.com. And I notice my password length is different. Once I register here, some really interesting things are happening behind the scenes. All right, see that I'm signed in here. Let's look at, I'm going to detach from this. And pin this little window here, because what I want to look at are data connections. If you don't run your application first, this is going to be empty. And so what this has done, the first time that we ran this, because this uses Entity Framework. Now you might say, I don't know Entity Framework. That's perfectly fine. Just know that it does all the heavy lifting to talk to the SQL database on the back end. But the other cool thing that it does is if the database doesn't exist, it will actually create it for you. And that's really, really handy in a default template. So that's what this did right now. This is actually pointing to a database that it created. For those that have been using the technology in the past and would add a database to the app underscore data folder, notice you don't see anything there, but behind the scenes, there is actually this database that was created for you. And Entity Framework did that. As soon as we brought it up and registered, it said, does this database exist, does not exist, and actually created the database for you based on some of the classes we're gonna look at. Very, very powerful.
Because of that feature, I feel like I'll never have to go create a database again. If it already exists, I'll connect to it. If it doesn't exist yet, I'll just write the code or I'll use a framework like this and let it generate
Absolutely.
The database for me.
And for the folks that wonder, well, how can we, I don't know, take this database and what if I have another database? What if I don't want to use this database? Or maybe I want to use this database for testing and I need to migrate these changes to another database? We're going to look at that too. So I come over here to these data connections. I expand it. And again, you must run it first so that it gets created. Otherwise, you won't see this database there. Now, tables. We have users and roles. So as I registered my user here, let's go ahead and say show table data. And if we look, there's a GUID here is the ID. This is actually a string. My email confirmed. Notice, never, ever, ever, ever store a plain text password. This is actually a hash, so it's not even encrypted. It's a mathematical function that comes up with this long binary mess. And that can't just immediately be decrypted. There are techniques that people use to try to break hashes. And so they'll take a password and they will hash that password and see if it matches this hash. And so then what you do is you hash repeatedly over and over and over again. Some security experts actually go so far as recommending that some systems hash a password for a full 1 second, which is a bazillion times of hashes, just over and over and over again. So it makes it a little bit more difficult for attackers to hash a password and compare it to yours. They must.
I heard it said that a good hashing algorithm is not a fast one. You actually want it to be slow.
Want it to be slow.
If you have the resources, certainly a person has the time to wait long enough for that level of security.
Absolutely.
The interesting thing about a hash is that the same exact password always hashes the exact same. But once it's hashed, you don't come back from that hash.
That is true.
Without supercomputers.
Yep, absolutely. And there's a minor variation on there. You can actually have a salt that's applied to a beginning of a hash that kind of mixes it up even more. Mm-hmm. So if you hash the same password and it's got a different salt, it actually makes that a different resulting hash. All sorts of fun stuff they do with hashes nowadays. Okay, so notice I've got a couple fields here. In this case, let me just expand this. You can see the fields in there easier. Email confirmed, a phone number's there. So these are the default fields, and we're gonna get to how you customize these. So that's your user account. This is the one I just created. That's me. Now roles, we don't have anything in roles yet. And a role is pretty simple. It's an ID and a name. So again, like accounting. User roles. What roles does a particular user have? So you just have a key to roles and a key to the user. Easy enough. Now the ASP.NET user logins table, this is used when you're dealing with external login providers. So we'll look at this in module 3. ASP.NET user claims, this stores all the claims for the user. So claim type, claim value, remember I said it was a key value pair, the user ID, and just an ID for that table. So this is what it gives you by default, and we're going to look at in the next module how you customize these tables a little bit. So let's see what happens here with the magic in our application. So when we look at this template here, our application starts up. And notice, Owen startup attribute calls this configuration configure auth. So your application starts up, and this is going to configure all the Owen magic that happens for you. So let's navigate to this and move these windows around just a little bit here. Actually, I'm going to close this since we looked at that already.
So that's the startup auth file that you're in now. Where is that stored?
So startup called startup auth, which is in app underscore start. And that might seem like it's a special folder name. Like in web forms, it had all sorts of special folder names. This is just a convention. The fact that it's called app underscore start means nothing. It's just a convention that folks use for any of your startup code here.
Okay.
So in there is startup.auth, and you have identity.config. These are the two that are used for security and identity to configure it. So when I look at startup auth, we're configuring a couple things here related, and this is just template code. You don't necessarily need to understand what's going on here. This is creating your context, essentially what's talking to Entity Framework, and it's storing it so we can refer, so we can pull it out later on. This is changing a little bit going forward to make it a little bit easier to plug in with dependency injection.
Now, can you talk for a second about this application DB context? What is that entity?
So our application DB context, this is our code. Let's navigate to this guy. This is Entity Framework specific code. So a DB context is an Entity Framework class where you define what you are going to look at in your database, what entities, what essentially that relates to what tables you're going to be looking at. So this is the magic.
I like to think of it as the database manager. You know,
database
like
manager.
That term manager for collections of things, and the database or the DB context is like the thing that represents your entire database so that you can always go to it and say, I'm interested in some data from a table, or I need to put some data in a table.
Absolutely. Like yep, everything is going to go through that.
So we've got the DB context, and then I see here that we've got an identity DB context, likely derived from that.
Yep, so if we go to identity DB context, we see that as of V2 of identity, this is in the Microsoft ASP.NET identity.entity framework. So a specific implementation that is entity framework specific.
All right. And then what's deriving from that again? We've got the application DB
context. Application DB context. You'll find that the convention here is application something. So application DB context gives you something that you can work with. Because they've defined a bunch of stuff already in that entity framework namespace for identity. So when we look at this guy here,
Not to sidetrack you too much, but I'd like to see where the application DB context is defined. Maybe that's where you're taking us.
Yep, identity DB context, that exists in a compiled library that Microsoft provides, so you can't really do much with that. So what this application does, the template does, is it gives you one, an application DB context, and that code is in underneath your models folder in your identity models class. So this just gives you some template code. It says, you know what, we're inheriting from what's provided in the compiled libraries.
So yours might not be called application DB context. You might, in your application, you might call yours something else.
Yep, this is the template code. You can actually change these. You can change pretty much any of the naming conventions that you want, and we'll look at it a little bit in the next module and how you customize that a little bit more. When we go down here, we can see that the various OWIN providers, they use extension methods. Extension methods are really cool. They allow you to add on to an existing object. So let's say you have a string and you wanted to add a new function on every string. You could say, you know, this is my string dot be a food service provider. So extension methods allow you to add on to existing objects. And that's what these OWIN components do. We've got this iApp builder. And when we bring in other modules for OWIN, we looked at some of those namespaces before, right? They allow you to do Microsoft account, Facebook, et cetera. If we do dot, we can see that some of these things here, they're just extensions that get added on by those OWIN components. So we can say app.useFacebookAuthentication. And then we bring in to our project, let's say the Google Authentication OWIN provider. And then we get that method that shows up. And then we bring in the Microsoft module, that shows up. So then they're not all there by default. As you bring in modules, they add extension methods that make that show up for you. And so the cookie authentication, that's what we're used to. Think of in web forms, we had forms authentication, stored a cookie on the back end. This does something similar, a little bit different technology, but the same idea. This stores a cookie with some information in it. And that's the information that configures it. So when OWIN is dealing with the cookies, this is the information it's going to use and knows how to deal with that. Use external sign-in cookie, use two-factor sign-in cookie, two-factor, remember, browser check. So some basic template code that enables some things. So if you want to use two-factor sign-in, most of it is enabled, but we'll look at that in the two-factor module on how we can actually make that fully work. It doesn't fully work out of the box, and that's intentional. There's just a couple minor things you have to tweak to get it to work. And then here, we'll look at these different providers in the external login providers module. But this is just some commented out code when you want to do Microsoft account, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. And again, we'll look at that a little bit later. So now if we go to, let me close this file out. So that's just some startup code. That tells OWIN what to look for. And again, that's in the security side of it. Now we have the identity side of it. And here's our identity classes here. Remember I said there was an email service, an SMS service, a user manager, and a sign-in manager. So if we look at the SMS service, it's just a simple interface, iIdentity message service. And we're going to look at these classes in a little bit more detail when we get to the some of the future modules here, like when we do two-factor authentication. Email service. Now I said the user manager and sign-in manager. So let's look at the user manager here. The user manager is something that you're going to talk to. Remember, the user manager talks to the user store. Again, these are defined in Microsoft.ASP.NET Identity. So this is in a compiled module that you don't have access to. So here, we're just giving you a basic class.
Well, you do now that .NET is open source.
You do. you do in V3, correct.
There you go.
V2, no source yet. So this is some template code here that's, if we look at, user validator, allow only alphanumeric usernames, require unique email. Clearly, I want that. How do we do password validation? Right here, we plug that in just like that. New password validator, required length is 6, required digit equals true. So it's real easy to add on these different values. Remember previously, you could add all of this in, like say, in your web config file to change all these values. That I don't like that approach because one, it's not compiled, I can't really refactor easily, it's just something sitting in a config file. I like the fact that we have this nice Fluent API that we can use here. User lockouts. Is it enabled by default? True. How long do you want it to be locked out for? And we're going to look at this a little bit later in more detail. Two-factor providers, we're going to look at that as well. I don't want you to get confused by all this boilerplate code. We're going to kind of pick this apart as we go on. Let's go to our login now. So when we log in, excuse me, I mentioned that we have there's a user manager we can talk to and a sign-in manager. Well, here it is. Here's our sign-in manager class. When we log in, we take the credentials that user specified, an email, a password, if they checked off remember me on their webpage, and should we lock the account out if it fails, in other words, if we increment that lockout count. And we're gonna cover account lockout a little bit later, so we can kind of ignore the lockout for now. We try to sign in the user. What is the result? Success, it worked okay. The account's locked out. We have to verify this account or it's a failure. Very easy. The sign-in manager handles all that for us. Now, on the other hand, we have register user. And our register user here, the user clicks on the page. They click on the button to register the user. So they click on, let me log off here. Let me control F5 this to start without debugging. User registers, email, password, confirm password, they click on register. That brings them into this method, and we pass in some details. We have the email, password, all that passed in with us. User manager, if we want to create a user, remember I said we talked to the user manager? That's all we're doing here. We're saying, user manager, create that user for us. And a lot of things now, if there's a delay talking to a database, you'll see that we do an asynchronous call. And so this syntax here, this await and async, it might look a little confusing. Behind the scenes, it does a lot of really cool work for you, but it's easy to understand. If you have await, which in turn requires you to have async for your method call, when you are running this in ASP.NET, it comes down and hits this method. There's gonna be a delay talking to your database in the back end. That, it might seem short to you, but if you have a system that's handling, you know, thousands or millions of user requests, that could be a lot of delay. And those are threads that aren't being used to handle other requests. So this essentially says, hey, let this finish. We're gonna take this thread off and return it back to service other users. And when this call comes back, we'll pick it back right up where it left off and continue again. So for performance, this is great. It allows it to essentially, the runtime to handle more user requests and allows this to kind of call off to the database, let it do its work, however long that delay is, and then come back to you. If the result succeeded, then we sign in our user. So we register them, sign them in, and then they're good to go. So again, real easy. You deal with a user manager and a sign-in manager. And when we're all done, we just redirect them to the homepage, which is what we saw before. Adam@node.com. I'll register. And there I go. I'm redirected back to this essentially homepage here. So real simple. Let's look at the same type of thing as we go to, let's do web forms, and we'll also do individual user accounts. So same thing I did before for MVC, but we're just gonna do this for web forms. And remember, we talked to a user manager and a sign-in manager, and there's an application user. Okay, so our models, we have our identity models. Same thing, we have an application user. We have an application DB context. Our application starts up, we also have a startup class, just like we had in MVC. That in turn calls our startup method, our startup.auth class. Same thing that we had in MVC. Notice this code looks identical. Now the actual user itself, we go into the account folder. Let me collapse a little of these so you can see it more. So account, when a user registers, let's look at that code behind here. So we're getting a reference to the user manager, and we're getting a reference to the sign-in manager. Those are the things that we want to talk to. We're going to create a new application user, which behind the scenes goes to identity user, which is an iUser. We give it the required information. We call the application user manager.create. Remember, if we want to create a user, we talk to the user manager. And then we sign in that user, and we redirect them back to a URL. So it's calling the exact same code behind the scenes. For those that have been used to using web forms, there's no like login control that you would use previously here. And that allows you to have virtually the same code between the systems. And all the template code is here for you. If you want to create your user, register your user, log in your user, all that code is provided for you. And it's virtually outside of some minor differences here, like where you get the context. In other words, where you refer to the user manager and where you refer to the sign-in manager. Outside of some differences between MVC and web forms on how you would do that, or where you would do that, I should say, everything else is virtually the same. We call a sign-in manager to sign them in, and we get a result code that comes back that we check the exact same way. So again, most of this code is virtually the same between web forms and MVC. Make sense so far?
Yep.
Hopefully it's a little clearer than mud right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we've got really good discussion in the chat room right now. People asking some good questions, and sounds like they're understanding.
Very good, very good. So again, user manager, application user manager. Sign-in manager to sign in a user. We talk to the user manager to create an account, get roles for a user, etc. We sign in a user using the sign-in manager, we check the result, and then we are essentially done. So a very, very simple process there. Out of the box, uses the Entity Framework behind the scenes, and creates a database for you, fills in all that information so you don't have to manage any of that. And in the next module, we're going to look at how to customize that a little bit more, how to look at this data in a little bit more detail. Maybe we want to change the names, maybe we want to add some custom fields into there. So we'll see you back shortly. Here's a couple of resources for you, and thanks for joining us again, and we'll see you for the next module.
Let's take a 10-minute break.